I want to speak to you this morning about the third nativity. We're very familiar with two nativity stories in the New Testament. Most of us are not aware that there are actually three nativity stories in the New Testament. We're very familiar with Matthew's nativity story. It has the Magi and other elements that give us all of those famous props and scenes for Christmas plays. We're very familiar with Luke's Christmas story with all those hymns and Magnificat of Mary and all those wonderful psalms that are representative of God's poor who sing out to God that His righteousness will defend them in their day of need. And we know the stories that are giving us those manger scenes and give us the angels who make the declaration to the shepherds. And these become a part of our pageantry and the pomp and circumstance of our season. We're very familiar with two of the nativity stories in the New Testament, but we are very less familiar with the third nativity story. There is a third story about the nativity in the New Testament, but it's wrapped up in apocalyptic, and so its message is a little obscure. I'm referring to Revelation chapter 12. You want to turn in your Bibles to the 12th chapter of the book of Revelation, and you have another nativity. John has another word for us for Christmas season. Revelation chapter 12. And a great sign appeared in the heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she's crying out in labor pains, and is agonizing to give birth. And another sign was seen in the heaven. Behold, a great fiery red dragon, having heads 7 and horns 10, and upon his head 7 diadems. And his tail drags a third of the stars of heaven, and he threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was going to give birth, in order that when she birthed her child, he might devour it. And she bore a male child who is going to shepherd all the nations with a rod of iron. And he was snatched, that is the child, her child, to God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has there a place which has been prepared by God in order that she might be nourished 1,260 days. Then comes the story of Michael, and moving down to the 13th verse, we pick up the story again. And when the dragon saw that he was cast down unto earth, he pursued the woman who bore the male child. And the two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman in order that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished there a time and times and half a time away from the presence of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth behind and after the woman a water like a river in order that he might sweep her away like a flood. And the earth helped the woman and opened up its mouth and swallowed the river which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And he became angry, this dragon, at the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her seed, those who keep the commandments of God and maintain the testimony of Jesus. In this passage, we have the third nativity in the New Testament, but it's wrapped up in the cloak of apocalyptic language. John here gives us the cosmic significance of that story in the manger. For indeed, what is most difficult to understand about the Christmas story is that the mundane is supercharged with cosmic significance. Shepherds out in a field, a young woman who is pregnant, those who are gathered around, very humble in estate, in their means and capabilities. And yet in this very setting is the setting that God has chosen to act decisively on the basis of his desire to save humankind. And indeed, this part of the Christmas message, that it is wrapped up in the cloak of the cosmic significance, is actually that part of the message that is hardest to translate into our current experience. For indeed, it makes a great play. But when I go home that night after seeing that Christmas pageant, I know that I have never seen an angel, and I know that an angel has never spoken to me. And yet somehow or another, the biblical text comes to me here in John, in his apocalypse, and tells me this one basic truth that he winds up his story at the very end of chapter 12 when he says, "And the dragon became wrathful at the woman and went off to make war with the rest of her seed, those who keep the commandments of God and maintain the testimony about Jesus." This is an important enwrapping of this Christmas story into my life. And it is John saying that the significance that bears upon the life of the Messiah is only found in how it makes sense to you and how it comes to apply in your life. You're not a shepherd out in the field, but you need to hear the voice of angels in order to garnish the significance of what Christmas is about. Because it's really not about shepherds in the field, it's about me. It's about me and my life, in my world. We see how in the New Testament this event was supercharged with the cosmic significance, but how to translate that into personal experience right now, this Christmas season, I think is the challenge that John gives to us. What he has given to us here is taking those stories that were very common in his day and in his world, stories that dealt with a cosmic deliverer in various civilizations and cultures, always had etiologies that dealt with how this world is evil, and trying to explain that it is evil, and that there needs to be a redeemer. There is a redeemer figure in these stories that redeems humankind and saves humankind. Dragons are very common in these kinds of stories. You know, using a dragon is not something that is totally extraneous to our own personal experience. A dragon as a concept is something that Steven Spielberg has made a lot of money on, because he's taken this conceptualization of this huge beast and how this great dinosaur then captures our imagination. On the movie screen is exactly the type of imagery that John is using here with this great fiery red dragon. Take that dragon out of the common stories and say that the cosmic significance of Jesus for anyone who has heard and felt the power of that kind of story is involved in this life of Jesus. That story then wraps up what he's doing. You'll notice very carefully in this passage that John has sandwiched the story. There was a part of the passage that we did not read that begins in verse 7 and deals with Michael the archangel and a battle in heaven. And what John tells us by sandwiching the story of the Christ event with Michael and the angels of heaven fighting with the dragon is that the story does not begin in Bethlehem in a manger. When he sandwiches these stories about the Christ event, and in the middle he puts Michael and the angels, he's using that typical Jewish tradition about Michael fighting the battles of God on behalf of God's people and defeating God's final opponent, the dragon. And by doing that, by sandwiching that story in between his Christ event story, parts 1 and part 2, at the beginning of chapter 12 and the end of chapter 12, he is saying that this story of Jesus begins before Bethlehem, that it has cosmic significance, that the battle that takes place for this little child in a manger is a battle that has taken place forever. It's already being fought in heaven, John is saying, and that redeemer figure that is so prominent in Jewish traditions, Michael, is the one who is active here. But then John takes that Jewish tradition and he envelops it in the Christ tradition, and he baptizes it unto Christ, and he says, there is a Redeemer figure. It is not Michael. The Redeemer figure is Christ. How this Christ comes to redeem is a part of the story, because in Michael, the story of Michael, if you'll notice in the middle of that material, which we didn't read, verse 11, notice what John says. says in this hymn that is sung. And they conquered him through the blood of the Lamb. So if there's any victory to be proclaimed at Christmas time, it is a victory that is bought by blood. It is the victory of a lamb that is slain. It is the victory of a child that is born to die. It is the victory that comes through suffering and death. And this is the victory that makes this story now translatable into my life. As I am called to obedience, I can respond to the Christmas story at this very point. They conquered him through the blood of the Lamb and through the word of their testimony. And that is how the cosmic significance of the Christmas story begins to translate into my personal life. I find myself participating in this victory in as much as I use this story as a basis for my witness in the world around me, that I can bring light to a very dark world. This is the story of God's restoration of God's people, of how God moves to take care of his people. That is the message of the wilderness in this passage. Wilderness is that place and time in Israel's experience when Israel was totally dependent upon God, even for daily food. And the rabbis had developed this tradition about manna being eschatological, that is, being in the end times, a food that would be fed to God's people. There would be this eschatological manna. And so that is how John takes up the traditions, and he has this woman who is surviving in the wilderness because she is nourished by God. There is that eschatological manna that is feeding God's people. So this restoration that becomes so important in the prophets is a part of what Messiah is doing among his people. He's bringing a restoration of all that he has done in calling his people to be a light in the world. This restoration is necessary because God's people have disobeyed, because God's people have moved away from God's will. It created the experience of exile. And it also created the possibilities of redemption from exile. And so the prophets pick up this speech, this pattern of speech, in which they proclaim that God will bring Israel back to Jerusalem. Hatzavi lak seunim semilak tamrurim shetilivak lav selah derekalak shuvi bitulat Yisrael shuvi el are kikale. Stand up, markers for yourself. Stand up, signposts for yourself. Set your heart toward the highway, the way by which you walked. Return, O Virgin of Israel. Return to these your cities, Jeremiah says in 31:21. Return, O Virgin of Israel. Return to your cities. God will accomplish his purposes in spite of judgment, in spite of the negative things that have happened in God's world. When God's people even have to be judged, God still will win in the end. When there is difficulty and trial in the exile, the prophet Jeremiah is saying, God will restore. The God who started this thing is the God who will end this thing. In the book of Revelation, that translates into God's title. I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the one who starts this story, and I am the one who will end this story. And so this translates into the birth pangs of the Messianic era. This woman who's in labor is bringing forth the Messiah. This is the Messianic community. This is the restoration of Israel. This is the hope that God has proclaimed. How does this translate for John and his community? It comes out in a testimony. The devil, the dragon here, becomes wrathful in verse 17, and what John does is he slows down the narrative timeline here in verse 17 and following. We have traced a cosmic story of a dragon who has opposed God for centuries and eons of time. And that story then suddenly finds us involved in the manger in that same story. And we see that story playing itself out in the life of this child who is born, who, as the dragon opposes this child, brings all kind of suffering and evil into this child's life, to the point that this child has to suffer and die on a cross, a cruel cross. And the dragon vents its wrath. But that's not the end of the story. The story doesn't begin in Bethlehem, nor does the story end at Calvary. The story goes on, and the story continues in Revelation as John slows down the narrative time and he contemporizes what is happening in this storyline. As he says in verse 17, the dragon goes off to make war with the rest of her seed. And that includes those Christians in Asia Minor who are in persecution, who are enduring a lot of harm and damage on behalf of their testimony because they keep the commandments of God and they hold to their testimony about Jesus. So that the Christmas story becomes a story of witness. The Christmas story does not have a beginning in Bethlehem and it does not have an end at Calvary. The Christmas story continues in the story of my witness in my world. My job is to recognize that in the daily living patterns that I have, that Christmas is playing itself out. The whole point of Christmas is that we understand the cosmic significance that a dragon is out there and he is doing everything he can to vent his wrath and anger upon the seed of the woman's children. Such that at Christmas time, we have the greatest opportunity for witness, but at Christmas time, we also have the greatest challenge. Indeed, maybe for us in America, the opportunity to witness this great, glorious coming of the Christ child is part of the drama that gives us a natural opening and an open door to witness to those around us, inviting others to Christmas pageants, getting them to be exposed to the Christmas story. But this Christmas story needs to be lived out in such a way that the dragon does not have his way 364 other days of the year. The dragon does not have his way the other days that we witness. That this Christmas story plays itself out in our lives in a way in which we are found faithful to the story. What does this story call me to? It calls me to testimony about Jesus. And it calls me to faithful witness. In America, we're not that challenged to have a faithful witness, quite frankly. But in China and in other places of the world, in order to live out this Christmas story and it become contemporaneous with my story, there is a challenge to hear the voice of the angels as we witness about Jesus Christ, to find this cosmic story a part of our lives as we give witness to Jesus Christ. It's my challenge to find my point of witness in my dark world. And if God calls upon me to have that kind of a testimony, if I happen to be called to be faithful, and I am found faithful enough to be persecuted, my prayer is that the Christmas challenge of testimony about Jesus, I could be found as faithful as the Asia Minor Christians who gave us this material because of their testimony to Jesus Christ. The third nativity, then, is the Christmas story of your life.